Welcome to Voter Information, the show that looks at elections in the city, the state, and the nation. This is your election guru, Mark Brown here. Glad you could join us today. And I remind you, you're listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind or print impaired. Materials or items read in AIRS LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Okay, so we are going to continue our foray into the special election regarding Proposition 50, there are a couple of things that we'd like to cover first, starting with, you guessed it, an obituary. From the Los Angeles Times, Monday, September 8, 2025, John Burton, 1932 to 2025, proud, powerful liberal who shaped politics in California for decades, by Dan Moraine. John L. Burton, the proudly liberal and pro-labor lawmaker who shaped California politics and policy over six decades on topics as varied as welfare, foster care, auto emissions, and guns and foil grass, has died. He was 92. With his brother, Representative Philip Burton, and college buddy, former San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown, Burton was integral to the organization that dominated Democratic politics in San Francisco and the state starting in the 1960s. Burton was elected to the Assembly in 1964 and Congress a decade later. Laid low by cocaine addiction, he did not seek re-election in 1982. But he returned to Sacramento after getting clean and became the capital's most powerful legislature as Senate President Pro Tem from 1998 until term limits forced him to retire in 2004. I think government's there to help the people who can't help themselves, and there's a lot of people that can't help themselves, Burton said, describing his view of a politician's job in an oral history interview by the nonprofit Open California. Burton's death was confirmed in a statement released by, by his family Sunday. He cared a lot, said Kimiko Burton, his daughter. He always instilled in me that we fight for the underdog. There are literally millions of people whose lives he helped over the years who have no idea who he is. Governor Gavin Newsom on Sunday praised Burton as a champion for the poor and the bullied, the disabled, and the forgotten Californians. John devoted his life to public service with a candor, passion, and determination that were simply unmatched, Newsom said in a statement. He breathed life into our democracy, built institutions that endure to this day, and never wavered in his fight for working people. An LA Times writer described Brown, always dapper and cool, as a piece of living art. In contrast, Burton was performance art, rumpled, often rude, too fidgety to sit long policy meetings. Some people sprinkle conversations with profanities. Burton doused his sentences with expletives, usually F-bombs. He was quick to yell, but could also be charming. He bought pies from a fruit stand off Interstate 80 between San Francisco and Sacramento and delivered them as apologies to targets of his rants. An aide once gave him a T-shirt with the phrase, "I yell because I care." Unlike most politicians who dress to the nines, Burton wore ties reluctantly and showed up at meetings with governors wearing guayaberas, rarely with his hair in place. When cameras weren't around, he drove through San Francisco delivering blankets to homeless people. One of Burton's many intensely loyal aides was Angie Tate, whom he hired to be his political fundraiser in 1998, knowing she was pregnant with twins. After she gave birth 3 months early, and tried to return to work, Burton insisted that she take a year off, fully paid. She worked with him for the rest of his days. In later years, he created John Burton Advocates for Youth, a nonprofit group to mentor, foster youths, and seek policy changes. One such bill extended services for foster youths until age 21, rather than the previous cutoff of 18. I don't think there is a person who has done more for foster kids than John Burton, said Miles Cooley, a Los Angeles entertainment attorney who was in foster care when he was a child and sits on the board of Burton's Foundation. He wasn't speaking truth to power, he was yelling it. From his early days in public life, Burton, a lawyer and Army veteran, advocated for greater civil rights, opposed the death penalty, and was an anti-war activist. Protesting U.S. involvement in Vietnam in October 1963, when the U.S. had fewer than 17,000 troops there. As state Senate leader for 4 decades later, Burton joined folk singer Joan Baez at a protest of President George W. Bush's impending invasion of Iraq. As California Democratic Party chair from 2009 to 2017, he presided as the party changed its platform to oppose capital punishment. John was liberal when it was popular to be liberal, and he was liberal when it was not popular. I always admired that, said former state senator Jim Brulte, a Republican who tangled with Burton in the legislature and later when they chaired their respective political parties. A party chair's job is to win elections. That requires money. In 2008, the year before Burton took over the state Democratic Party, the California Republican and Democratic parties raised and spent roughly equal sums. By 2016, his final campaign as chair, the Democrats were outspending the Republicans $36.2 million to $17.7 million. He promoted a ballot measure in 2010 that allows the legislature to pass the annual budget by a simple majority rather than the previous two-thirds majority, allowing the Democrats to pass a legislative session's most important measure, the budget, without Republican votes, further marginalizing the GOP in Sacramento. When Burton stepped down from the California Democratic Party in 2017, Democrats held all statewide offices and had supermajorities in both houses of the 120-seat legislature. Representative Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of San Francisco, then Representative Barbara Lee, Democrat of Oakland, Los Angeles County Supervisor Hilda Solis, and State Treasurer Fiona Ma were among the politicians, most of them women, who joined Burton on the convention stage in 2017 for his farewell as party chair. Former State Senator Martha Escutia serenaded him with a rendition of Besame Mucho. John is the chief architect of the Democrats' dominance in California, Pelosi said at the time. Burton paid tribute to the people who had helped him, saying, "You're only as good as your staff," and closed by exhorting party loyalists to raise their middle fingers and give Burton a Burton-like cheer to then-President Trump. Although Burton was a partisan, his closest friend in the Senate was Ross Johnson of Fullerton, who was Senate Republican leader. Sharing a quirky love of song, the unlikely duo interrupted a Senate floor session with a rendition of Big Rock Candy Mountain. They also shared a distrust of authority and collaborated to curb law enforcement's ability to seize individuals' assets without a trial. Burton and Johnson shaped campaign finance law with a ballot measure permitting political parties to accept unlimited donations, enhancing parties' power. As a sweetener for voters, the measure required rapid disclosure of contributions. John Lowell Burton, born in Cincinnati in 1932, was the youngest of three brothers. After his father completed medical school in Chicago, the family relocated to San Francisco, where Dr. Burton cared for patients whether they could pay or not. Burton lettered in basketball at San Francisco State College and kept a clipping of the newspaper box score showing he scored 20 points against a University of San Francisco team that included a young Bill Russell, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. He met Brown at San Francisco State, and they became lifelong friends. A bartender in his younger days, Burton was arrested for bookmaking in 1962, but was cleared. Burton credited his oldest brother, Philip, with pushing him to enter politics. A dominant political figure, Representative Phil Burton might have become House Speaker if he had not died in 1983 at the age of 56. The Burton brothers reflected a dichotomy in California politics, rising from the left when Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan ascended from the right against the swirl of the Bay Area's brand of radical politics. John Burton and Brown won their assembly seats in 1964, the same year that voters approved a ballot measure backed by the real estate industry, giving property owners the right to refuse to sell to people of color. Courts later overturned it. The Burton Brown Organization spawned a who's who of leaders, including two San Francisco mayors, George Moscone, who was a high school friend, and Brown, the most powerful assembly speaker in California history. Burton was a friend of Newsom's father, a state appellate court judge, and watched young Gavin's high school sports games. Brown gave Newsom his start in politics with an appointment. Barbara Boxer worked for John Burton during his time in Congress before succeeding him in 1982 and winning a U.S. Senate seat a decade later. When Boxer retired in 2016, Brown helped promote Boxer's successor, Kamala Harris. Pelosi is most consequential of all. Philip Burton's widow, Sala Burton, succeeded him in Congress. As she was dying of cancer, Sala Burton told her brother-in-law that she wanted Pelosi to succeed her, and he used all his connections to help Pelosi win the congressional seat in 1987. In November 1978, Burton declined an invitation from Representative Leo Ryan, a Democrat of San Mateo, to accompany him to Guyana to investigate the People's Temple cult, once a force in San Francisco politics. On November 18, as Ryan's plane was about to depart with cult defectors, one of cult leader Jim Jones' followers assassinated the congressman. Jones led a murder-suicide, resulting in more than 900 deaths. On November 27, 1978, with the city convulsed by the Jonestown cataclysm, Dan White, a former San Francisco supervisor, sneaked into City Hall and assassinated Moscone and supervisor Harvey Milk. Burton fell hard in the months and years after, drinking heavily, huffing nitrous oxide and freebasing cocaine. He missed congressional votes, and aides feared he would be found dead. In 1982, he checked into a rehab facility in Arizona and did not seek re-election. Back in San Francisco, he built a law practice, staying clean, and returned to politics, winning a special election for an open assembly seat in 1988. He reunited with Speaker Brown and became his close ally. Burton's eclectic circle of friends included national political figures, including glitterati football coach John Madden, North Beach topless dancer Carol Doda, and from his bartending days, Alice Kupfer, a cocktail waitress. In this small world, Kupfer's son James Rogan won an assembly seat from the Burbank area as a Republican in 1994 and was elected to Congress in 1996, and helped lead the impeachment of President Clinton. Politics aside, Burt and Rogan shared a connection through Kupfer. That friendship mattered on May 30, 1996, when Republicans, holding a short-lived 41-39 seat advantage in the Assembly, rushed to approve tough-on-crime bills. One bill would have made it a crime for pregnant women to abuse drugs, a response to accounts of babies born addicted to cocaine. The GOP-led Assembly seemed certain to pass it when Burton stood to speak. Though not a commanding orator, Burton spoke from the heart about how cocaine takes control of your life, how he spent days freebasing in hotel rooms, refusing maid service because he didn't want anyone to see him. It took me, somebody who at least has got a fair set of brains sometimes, who comes from a background that is not deprived, who at the time I was doing it, and I'm not proud to say, was a member of the House of Representatives, and it took me 2 years to get off this drug, which is the most insidious drug you can imagine, Burton said. Floor speeches rarely change minds, but after Burton pleaded with Republicans not to turn these young women into criminals, Rogan, then Speaker Kurt Pringle, and a few other Republicans withheld their votes. With the bill pending, Republicans conferred behind closed doors and quietly dropped the bill. It wasn't planned. It wasn't scripted. It was pure John Burton, said Rogan, who went on to become a Superior Court judge in Orange County. Burton was the only Democrat who had the relationships and gravitas to derail the bill. For most of his time in office, Burton served under Republican governors. He butted heads with them and on occasion won them over. When young Assemblyman Burton sought to decriminalize marijuana, Reagan, implying that Burton was a nut, quipped that the San Franciscan was the one man in Sacramento who was the most to fear from the squirrels that populated Capitol Park. Burton answered by calling reporters to the park and trying to feed squirrels a copy of some Reagan-backed legislation. "There's some benefit to people thinking you're nuts," Burton said in an interview. Though he was a relatively junior legislator, Burton took a lead role in Reagan's 1971 welfare overhaul, pushing for an annual cost of living adjustments for welfare recipients, something he fought to protect over the years. He disparaged Governor Pete Wilson, a Marine Corps veteran, for his efforts to limit welfare by calling him the Little Marine. Burton had a wicked sense of humor and a colorful way of expressing it, but was a straight shooter, Wilson said. With respect to legislative leaders, as Democrats, I would say that the combination of John Burton and Willie Brown negotiating budget and policy solutions during a time of crisis in the Reagan cabinet room was some of the finest policy and political talent California has ever seen, Wilson said. Voters elected Burton to the state Senate in 1996, and senators elected him Senate President Pro Tem in 1998. Theo Gray Davis was elected governor, the first Democrat to hold that office after 16 years of Republicans. The relationship was strained. In appearance, temperament, and approach, they were opposites, and they clashed. Davis was a centrist who tried to be tight-fisted. Burton, often dismissive of Davis, tried to pull them to the left. When it suited their interests, however, Davis sent legislation that Burton advocated, and Burton carried administration legislation. "It ain't brain surgery," Burton said in 2021 of the art of turning a bill into a law, but few legislatures could handle a lawmaking scalpel like Burton. As Senate leader, he shepherded legislation to buy the last large stands of old-grown redwoods, increase public employee pensions, restrict guns, and expand the right to sue, including for victims of sexual harassment. He was the target of such a suit in 2008. It was settled a few months later. Burton routinely blocked the legislation that increased the length of prison sentences, but was a favorite of the California Correctional Peace Officers Association, which represented prison guards. He was, after all, pro-labor. In 2002, Burton carried legislation ratifying the prison officers' contract negotiated by the Davis administration that granted officers a raise of roughly 35% over 5 years and boosted their pensions. Later that year, the union run by the fedora-wearing Don Navi celebrated Burton's 70th birthday by donating $70,000 to his campaign account. Often, Burton sought no credit for what he helped others accomplish, as Fran Pavley discovered. In 2001, her first year in the Assembly, Pavley, an Agoura Hills Democrat, proposed far-reaching climate change legislation to authorize the California Air Resources Board to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from vehicle tailpipes. Lobbyists for automakers shifted into overdrive, airing ads warning California that Assembly Bill 1058 would dictate what cars people could own. The oil industry, Drive Time Talk Radio host, and even Cal Worthington and his dog Spot piled on. AB 1058 looked like roadkill. Burton's solution? Hijack another bill and insert the contents of Pavley's bill into it. With that bit of legerdemain, AB 1058 died. AB 1493 was born, and the auto industry's campaign crashed. Burton didn't attend the ceremony when Davis signed the bill, nor did he accompany Pavley a decade later when President Obama held a Rose Garden ceremony celebrating the California concept in nationwide fuel efficiency standards. Pavley said she had never seen a politician work so hard for a bill for no credit, and I haven't seen it since. Burton took special interest in certain issues. He was, for example, appalled at the force feeding of ducks and geese to enlarge their livers to produce foie gras. In one of his final bills, he battled restaurant owners and agricultural interests to ban the practice, and passed the Senate by one vote. In a letter urging Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger to sign the bill against the wishes of some chefs, he included Burtonesque doggerel, "Save Donald Duck, F. Wolfgang Puck." Schwarzenegger signed the bill and sent Burton a photo of himself and Burton in the governor's office looking at the bottom of the governor's shoe with a note, "I got duck liver on my shoe." In the background of the photo, there's an image of Reagan smiling with his head tilted back as if he's having a good laugh. Burton, who was divorced twice, is survived by his daughter, attorney Kimiko Burton, and two grandchildren. That was John Burton, 1932 to 2025, proud, powerful liberal who shaped politics in California for decades, by Dan Moraine, from the Los Angeles Times, Monday, September 8, 2025. All right, on to other business with the special elections. This is from thehill.com, and this is called Special Takeaways from Virginia Special Election, Boston Mayor's Race, by Julia Manchester, for September 9th, 2025. Democrats scored a win in the race to replace former Representative Jerry Connolly, Democrat, in Virginia's 11th Congressional District, narrowing the Republican majority in the House of Representatives. Fairfax County Supervisor James Walkinshaw, Democrat, handily defeated Republican Stuart Whitson, a former FBI agent, in the heavily Democratic-leaning district Tuesday. The race offered some insight on what to watch out for ahead of the state's gubernatorial elections in November. Additionally, Boston held its nonpartisan mayoral primary, setting up a November showdown between incumbent Mayor Michelle Wu, Democrat, and nonprofit executive Josh Kraft, Democrat, the son of New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft. Here are key takeaways from Tuesday's special elections. While Walkinshaw's victory is no surprise, it's notable because it will impact the Republican majority in the House of Representatives. The late Connolly's seat was one of three Democratic vacancies, leaving Republicans with a 219-212 majority. Those vacancies have helped Republicans during crucial votes this year, including the vote to pass the GOP spending mega bill, also known as President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill, in May. That legislation passed by just one vote. However, Walkinshaw's victory will narrow the GOP majority to 219-213 once he's sworn in, meaning Johnson will only be able to lose two votes from his conference. Johnson and House Republicans are already grappling with an upcoming government funding deadline. The remaining two Democratic vacancies in the House are the seats previously held by former Reps Sylvester Turner, Democrat of Texas, and Raul Grijalva, Democrat of Arizona, both who died earlier this year. Former Representative Mark Green, Republican of Tennessee, resigned earlier this year, leaving Republicans with one vacancy. While Democrats have struggled to unify the first year of Trump's second administration, the party has seen a number of special election wins across the country. Like in Virginia's 11th Congressional District, the party has seen widely expected wins in safe Democratic strongholds. In January, Democrats predictably came out on top in two special legislature elections in Northern Virginia. But Democrats have also pulled off some upsets this year, winning contested state legislature races in Iowa and Pennsylvania, as well as a Wisconsin state Supreme Court race. The next contested special election to watch will take place later this month in Georgia, where a Democrat will face off against a Republican in a runoff election to fill a state Senate seat. The Republican in that race, however, is heavily favored. Democrats argue the string of special election wins prove there is enthusiasm from their base despite frustrations with their party. Representative-elect Walkinshaw's victory continues the dominant trend we've seen so far this year. Democrats are massively overperforming in nearly every race, Democratic National Committee Chair Ken Martin said in a statement. However, Republicans note off-year special elections are rarely indicative of turnout in major election years. While the margins in the race are likely to change slightly after Tuesday, Walkinshaw's win appeared to surpass former Vice President Kamala Harris's margin of victory in the district last year. Harris won the district by 34 points in November, but as of Tuesday night, with 57% of the vote reported, Walkinshaw led Whitson by more than 50 points. It's a promising sign for Virginia Democrats running in November's races, which include contests for governor and lieutenant governor. While Northern Virginia is not considered the most competitive portion of the state, strong Democratic turnout in the region is essential for a statewide win for the party. The District of Columbia suburbs, as well as other portions of Virginia, have been heavily impacted by the Trump administration's cuts to the federal workforce under the Department of Government Efficiency. Virginia Democrats, including Walkinshaw and gubernatorial candidate Abigail Spanberger, have made the impact of the cuts one of the central parts of their campaign messaging. Tuesday's special election win for Democrats could be the first sign that messaging is energizing the Democratic base. Wu will face off against Kraft in the city's mayoral race this November, both after both Democrats advanced to the general election. Wu, who is seeking a second term, and Kraft each advanced out of Tuesday's nonpartisan primary. Wu held a commanding 65% lead Tuesday evening, while Kraft trailed at 30%. Candidates Robert Cappucci and Domingos De Rosa came in at 3.2% and 1.7% support, respectively. An Emerson College survey released last week showed Wu leading Kraft 72% to 22%. Another 24% said they were undecided. The election comes as the Department of Homeland Security targets Massachusetts in an immigration crackdown dubbed Patriot 2.0. The department has said that the operation is aimed at targeting the worst of the worst criminal illegal aliens living in the state of Massachusetts. Wu has vocally spoken out against the Trump administration's efforts in Boston, saying she will push back against federal immigration enforcement in the city. That was key takeaways from Virginia's special election Boston mayor's race by Julia Manchester from TheHill.com for September 9th, 2025. All right, back to the business at hand, our special election. This is from the perspective section of the Los Angeles Times Wednesday, August 20, 2025. A short-sighted and risky power grab by Newsom. Redistricting plan may energize Democrats, but it won't fix their bigger problem. By Mark C. Baraback, columnist. Today we discuss flora, fauna, and self-gratification. You've been away. Yes, I was living in a tent for 2 weeks, communing with the pine trees and black bears in the Sierra. You heard about California's likely special election? I did. It seems Governor Gavin Newsom will have his way with the help from the Democratic-run legislature, and voters will be asked in November to approve a partisan gerrymandering aimed at offsetting a similar Republican power grab in Texas. As many as 5 GOP House seats could be erased from the congressional map drawn by California's Independent Redistricting Commission, which voters established more than a decade ago, expressly to take the line drawing away from a bunch of self-interested politicians. Fighting fire with fire. Could we please retire that phrase, huh? Also references to knife fights and Democrats showing up with pencils, rubber bands, butter knives, and other wimpy implements. The campaign hasn't even started and already those metaphors have grown stale. Fine, at least the Democrats are showing some fight. It's an impulsive, short-sighted fashion. Look, I get it. Donald Trump truly knows no bottom when it comes to undermining Democratic norms, running a familial kleptocracy, and in the felicitous phase of Gustavo Arellano, my fellow Times columnista, treating the Constitution like a pee pad. Democrats are powerless in Washington, where a compliant Republican-controlled Congress and a supine right-wing Supreme Court have shown all the deference of a maitre d' squiring Trump to his favorite table. So the idea of doing something to push back against the president is quite invigorating and, no doubt, gratifying for Democratic partisans. It's also expedient and facile, sparing the party from looking inward and truly doing the truly hard work it faces. Taking on Republicans over redistricting, a fight among insiders as far as many voters are concerned, does absolutely nothing to address the larger problem confronting Democrats, which is the absence of any broader message beyond Trump bad. We saw how that worked for them in 2024. But this is a break-the-glass moment for our democracy. Governor Newsom said so. Please. The only thing worse than a grasping and nakedly calculating politician is a politician who grasps his grasping and naked calculation in all sorts of red, white, and blue bunting. At bottom, this is all about Newsom's overweening presidential ambitions. How so? The whole episode started when our gallivanting governor went on a left-wing podcast during a Southern campaign swing and huffed and puffed about responding to Trump and Texas by executing a similar gerrymander in California. He elided the fact that under the state constitution, he has no such authority, hence the need for a special election to seek voter approval of new slanted political lines. Soon enough, Newsom's threat took on a life of its own. Normally, redistricting is done once every 10 years, after the latest census. Suddenly, mid-decade redistricting became a new front in the ever-escalating war between red and blue. Now several more states are talking about rejiggering their congressional maps for partisan gain. The problem for Newsom and his fellow Democrats is that Republicans have a lot more gerrymandering opportunities than they do. So instead of those five Democratic-held seats in Texas, many more could be at risk for the party in 2026. Golly. Though it should be said at this point that all that election handicapping is nothing more than speculation. What do you mean? Democrats do need to flip three congressional districts to seize control of the House. That's why Trump prodded Texas Republicans to try to nab those five extra seats to give the GOP some padding. But there's no guarantee Republicans will win all five seats. They're counting on the same strong Latino support that Trump received in 2024, and recent polling suggests some of that GOP sentiment may be waning. Beyond that, the ever-insightful Amy Walter of the nonpartisan Cook Political Report made an important point. Even as the possibility of new maps in Texas and California may change the size and the shape of the 2026 playing field, she wrote in a recent analysis, the fate of the Republican-controlled House is ultimately still going to be determined by two fundamental questions. How do voters feel about the state of the economy, and how do independent voters assess the party in power? It's a long way to November 2026, but at this point, neither of those factors augurs well for Trump and Republicans. Well, they started it by messing with Texas. True, and none of this is meant to defend Trump, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, or the president's other political henchmen. But effectively disenfranchising millions of California Republicans isn't any better than effectively disenfranchising millions of Texas Democrats. Huh? If Democrats have their way, the GOP would hold just a handful of California's 52 House seats, or even less. How is that possibly fair or representative in a state that's home to millions of Republican voters, more in fact than any state other than Texas? There are already countless residents living outside Democrats' city and suburban strongholds who feel ignored and politically impotent. That's not healthy for California or democracy. It breeds anger, resentment, cynicism, and a kind of political nihilism that ultimately helps lead to the election of a middle finger president like Donald Trump. Of course, Newsom may not care, since at this twilight point of his governorship, it's all about his White House hopes and desire to pander to the Democrats' aggrieved political base by fighting fire with fire and potentially burning the whole place down. That was a short-sighted and risky power grab by Newsom. By Mark Z. Baraback, columnist, from the Perspective section of the Los Angeles Times, Wednesday, August 20, 2025. And from the City and State section of the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, August 26, 2025, Newsom on why partisan redistricting is necessary. The governor says the state must fight Trump, who is trying to rig the election, by Melody Gutierrez and Laura J. Nelson. Sacramento. Moments after California lawmakers passed a plan designed to undercut attempts by the president and fellow Republicans to keep control of Congress, Governor Gavin Newsom said the state's proposed partisan redistricting that favors Democrats is a necessary counterweight to President Trump's threat to the American democracy. Trump's assault on vote by mail and decision to send the military into U.S. cities are evidence of his authoritarian policies, and California must do its part to keep him in check, Newsom said. By deploying federal immigration agents in roving street raids and activating thousands of members of the National Guard in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., Newsom said Trump is amassing a private army for Donald Trump. He's trying to rig the election. He's trying to set up the conditions where he can claim that the elections were not won fair and square, Newsom said. Open your eyes to what is going on in the United States of America in 2025. The argument is a preview of the messaging for the ballot measure campaign that Newsom and his Democratic Party allies will be running over the next few months. On Thursday, California lawmakers signed off on the November 4th special election that will put partisan redistricting in front of voters. The ballot measure, called Proposition 50, will ask voters to discard the congressional boundaries drawn by the state's Independent Redistricting Commission in 2021 in favor of partisan districts that could boot as many as 5 California Republicans out of Congress. When all things are equal, we're all playing by the same set of rules, Newsom said. There's no question that the Republican Party will be the minority party in the House of Representatives next year. California is responding to what occurred in Texas. We're neutralizing what occurred, and we're giving the American people a fair chance, Newsom said. National Republican Congressional Committee Chair Representative Richard Hudson of North Carolina accused Newsom of trying to rig the system to advance his own political career. Instead of fixing the homelessness, crime, drug, and cost crises crushing the Golden State, Gavin Newsom is tearing up the California Constitution to advance his presidential ambitions, Hudson said in a statement. California's new lines would neutralize efforts in Texas to redraw its congressional district maps to help elect 5 more GOP candidates in 2026. The other option, Newsom said, is for California and Democrats to roll over and do nothing. I think people all across the country are going to campaign here in California for this, Newsom said. They recognize what's at stake. It's not just about the state of California. It's about the United States of America. It's about rigging the election. It's about completely gutting the rules. That was why Newsom on why partisan redistricting is necessary by Melody Gutierrez and Laura J. Nelson from the City and State section of the Los Angeles Times, Tuesday, August 26, 2025. Times staff writer Seema Mehta contributed to this report. All right, so let's bring you up to speed on the special elections and regularly scheduled elections that are upcoming. As we reported earlier, there's apparently 2 more special congressional elections that will be happening, with Tennessee's 7th district, where the previous member was Mark Green, who resigned. The replacement election will happen on December 2nd, and also in Texas's 18th district, where the previous member was Sylvester Turner, who died. That special election will happen on November 4th. Regularly scheduled elections for this time of year. And we have 2 gubernatorial races that are scheduled. We have one in Virginia up for grabs, where the main candidates are Democrat Abigail Spanberger and Republican Winsome Earl Sears. And right now, according to polls, most recently for September 10th, 2025, it's Abigail Spanberger on top, 48% to 42% for Winsome Earl Sears, with others and undecideds at 9.8%. Of course, we have another regularly scheduled gubernatorial race in New Jersey. The candidates are Mikey Sherrow and Jack Ciattarelli. And as far as polls are concerned in that race, as recently as September 5th, 2025, we have Democrat Mikey Sherrill on top at 46.8% to Jack Ciattarelli at 38%, with others are undecided at 15.2%. Of course, we're also familiar with the mayoral race happening in New York City, and the nominees there are the incumbent Eric Adams running as an independent. We have Democrat Zoran Mamdani, Republican Curtis Sliwa, and independent Andrew Cuomo. The polls at this point, as of September 9th, has Zoran Mamdani leading at 39.7%, with Andrew Cuomo at approximately 24.8%, Curtis Sliwa at 15%, and incumbent Eric Adams at 10.5%. There are plenty of other mayoral races happening as well, and we'll give you all elections and results as soon as they are available to us. Until next time, everybody, this is your election guru, Mark Braun. Happy voting and peace.